You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Hi, this is Alex Ruggieri. Thanks for joining us today. Have a fantastic show lined up for you. Starting out right out of the gate with Alexander Scheline. He is the president and chief technology officer of a little company called SpectroClick. Welcome.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I'm delighted to have you. We met at TechMix.
Indeed.
And had a fantastic conversation about your company, SpectroClick. And I love bringing folks in here and shining a light on all the really cool, unique, interesting companies that are just blossoming here in Champaign-Urbana, University of Illinois, and in the private sector. It's just really
cool Silicon
stuff.
Prairie.
Yeah, Silicon Prairie. I love it. Tell us about SpectroClick. What do they do?
SpectroClick makes handheld spectrometers. Now, let me translate that into English.
Yeah, yeah.
A spectrometer is a device that looks at the interaction of light and matter. So if you want to understand how much of some impurity is in soil, water, you name it, the way to do that is to let light do the work for you so that you don't have to do it yourself. After all, you can't see atoms and molecules very easily, and even if you see them, you can't tell which is which and how much there is. Well, with spectrometry, you can. Now, of course, there have been lots of people that have been using spectrometry for a very long time. I mean, Arnold Beckman is famous for having manufactured an electronic spectrometer back in 1940. We've got one of them sitting up in the Beckman
Institute. One of the original ones.
One of the originals, you bet.
He donated all those millions for the Beckman Center.
Indeed. But if you were going to use a Beckman DU, you'd better be an expert physicist or chemist or biologist.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't it be nice if just folks could answer their own questions rather than having to be an expert and go through a bachelor's degree and name your favorite subject?
Right.
So what SpectroClick hopes to do is not only provide inexpensive, reliable instruments, but to solve people's problems directly. So let me give you an example. If you go to the Beckman DU and you look at its readout, it will tell you the intensity of light at a particular wavelength or color. Well, that doesn't tell you much.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is...
You need a chemical signature.
Yeah, you need a chemical signature, and we'll take care of that for you. We'll have little packets that have QR codes on them, these little...
We've seen those in grocery stores.
Right, and the QR code will say, well, what's in this packet will help you figure out the concentration of nitrate in water, something that might be fertilizer runoff from a farmer's field. So you take the little package, you take a sample of the water, you put it together, and what will come up on the screen when you're done is not some number, but high, medium, low. Or if you want the number, of course, we'll tell you. But there are, if you have lots of fertilizer running off from a farmer's field, you've just been wasting money on fertilizer that's going to do nothing but cause a bloom at the outlet of the Mississippi River.
Right.
That's in nobody's interest.
Right.
So if
it's
we can,
expensive, too.
Yeah. So if we can simply say, green light, you don't have any excess runoff, or red light, you've got too much, that's an actionable result. And that's what we're headed for, is actionable results where we do the hard work of figuring out what signals correspond to what outcomes. And then the user simply says, oh, I don't have a problem, or oops.
Well, now let me just ask a few questions. First of all, this is amazing because, you know, we've heard of spectrometry and astrophysics and you know, how they look at the signature of the light coming in from, planets or stars, and they can tell you what they're composed of.
Indeed.
You know, because those signatures are there, and that's how we know that the universe is made out of the same stuff we are and vice versa.
Absolutely.
You know, we're actually made out of the stuff the universe is. But when you're doing something as specific as testing for runoff in, say, your river or your creek next to the farm or whatever, it seems to me like there would be an infinite number of possibilities of what could be in that water. How does the spectrometer, does it just search for everything? Or is what you're saying about the QR, does that program it somehow?
Oh, it has to program it. I mean, you're absolutely right that there's, I think, something like 30 million different compounds that have been cataloged.
Wow, alone how many 30 there million.
Actually, yeah, talk to the American Chemical Society on that one.
Yeah.
But there are chemical reactions you can do that are selective for particular things.
Right.
And so by adding chemistry plus light, you end up with a more selective result. Mm-hmm. So for nitrate, I mean, if you have a solution that's a saturated solution of ammonium nitrate, it'll look like clear water to the human eye. But if you add the appropriate reactants, you get a color that, well, you could probably see it naked eye, but to quantify it takes an instrument.
Right.
And so we provide the instrument.
Okay.
We provide the chemicals. All you have to do is provide the water that's the sample. So you put water in, take a look at what it looks like without the reactant, open the packet that has the QR code, pour it in, shake it up, make a measurement.
How
and
cool.
Now we'll tell you how it is, what how the concentration cool. is.
And what kinds of applications do you see for this type of technology? We mentioned one.
Yeah, well, we have a number of... environmental monitoring, runoff, which is an economic issue as much as an environmental issue for farmers. Industrial monitoring, both for quality control of products and also for screening of starting materials, looking for impurities in materials so you don't use stuff and then say, gee, I wish I hadn't had this contamination. One of our early customers is the U.S. military. It turns out they need to do a lot of environmental monitoring, and so we've got an instrument that's targeted to help them do that. And eventually we want just folks to be able to help do a quality control in their gardens or when they're backpacking, figure out whether the water's safe to drink.
Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah. We're not there yet, but we're working on it. We're getting close.
Yeah, because, I mean, I took my boys, we were all scouters, and we went on these trips where we had to carry everything in. Our food was freeze-dried and this, that, and the other, mm-hmm. because we weren't going to be anywhere near anything for 8, 9, 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we did was, well, we had one canteen, but you can't take all the water that you're going to drink or need or use. And so we would rely on streams and things. And we would find streams that were perfectly clear, that looked, you know, tantalizingly delicious. But we still treated because we had no way of knowing if there was anything in there.
Right. And if you have the appropriate tests for coliform bacteria,
right.
arsenic, lead, whatever the worries are for a particular geographic area, then you can screen the water and say, well, at a particular level, it's clearly harmful or probably safe or in between. And in fact, that's one of the things that we will always have is an in-between area. You cannot do in a handheld instrument what you can do in a well-controlled, air-conditioned lab where everything's nice and stable.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to have not just good, bad, but good, not quite sure, and then not up to standard.
Now, is this technology primarily rely on putting a liquid in? So like, for instance, so first responders are trying to figure out, hey, did this building blow up because there was a natural gas leak?
Mm-hmm.
Or did this building blow up because somebody put, you know, gasoline in set up an explosion? Or are there nitrates or whatever involved with C4?
Yeah, where we're initially going is for aqueous solutions. In
right.
general, there are two sorts of measurements that we will be in good shape to do. One is liquids in general, not just water.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is reflectance measurements. So mm-hmm. if you have a test strip, you can read that out. And in fact, for some of the environmental samples, having test strips that are selective for metal ions is the way that at least the Army wants to go at doing things. Another use, actually, that I neglected to say earlier is in the education market.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of instruments that have been around, well, since you and I were in school. Maybe you're a little older than you are. Since I was in school.
I'm up there.
And they've never been replaced because while they're antique technology, people can't afford to do it. Well, we hope to be able to put together packages that are sufficiently economical that it becomes attractive to people to get rid of this old technology.
Like what?
Well, the one that comes to mind is something called the Spectronic 20. The Spec 20 was actually a mature technology back in 1970. In fact, there were even some high schools that had them. And they could only look at one color or one wavelength at a time. And there are still places that use these things because the replacements cost a few $1,000s,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
who wants to spend that? So mm-hmm. if we can get the costs down to where it's less expensive, we can either get to where the schools can afford these less expensive instruments, or the dream situation, the students can afford to buy their own.
How
and
incredible.
I think the trade-off on that is when the cost of the instrument is less than the cost of the textbook, then you've got a chance to do something.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, when you talk about aging ourselves, the big deal when I was younger was the Hewlett, first of all, Texas Instrument came out with the SR-10 or whatever it was. And it had scientific notation, and it was crazy cool. And then Hewlett-Packard came out with an LED version of their...
HP35, I remember it well.
It was cool. And everybody had to have one, and they were still kind of expensive. And now, I mean, I have one, but...
The app on your phone.
It's an app on my phone. And so it's
possible. You got it. In the long term, lots of people see this as a phone app rather than as a separate standalone instrument.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a fellow in Newark, Delaware, that has the patent on all cell phone spectrometry.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed.
Is that possible to do?
Well, it was a well-written patent.
I guess.
And he and I know each other reasonably well. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
He has never sold a single cell phone spectrometer. Why not? Because the cameras are too smart. And you can see this pretty easily. You go outside on a dark evening and you take a selfie. It looks pretty good. You come inside to a nice bright studio like this, use the same phone, same camera, take a selfie. Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So the phones are the cameras in the phones are programmed to compensate for changes in light rather than report changes in light.
Oh, interesting.
So a conversation that he and I had about a year ago, he's working on some of the cell phone manufacturers to allow access to the raw information. And once the raw information's available, then it's going to be open season, and there are lots of people that have interesting ideas. Obviously, we're among them, and mm-hmm. we think we have a good way to make use of this because, unlike anybody else's technology, we can use the whole rectangular picture to get data rather than just a straight line going across. We call it a spectral burst, and we've got a trademark on that.
Well, fantastic.
I can't show you that on the radio.
I can't,
just got to go to our website.
I can't believe it's time for a break, but I do want to talk about the future of your company, what you see coming, if we can. We'll take a short break. Stay with us. We're having a lively conversation with Alexander Scheline, President and Chief Technology Officer of SpectroClick. And we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. We are talking with Alexander Scheline. He is the president and chief technology officer of a company called SpectroClick. And wow, what a brave new world with such instruments in it.
Yes.
We were talking about how this kind of technology was so lofty and so kind of unavailable to the general public. And that is this technology of being able to analyze light to determine chemical composition or
spectrometry.
Spectrometry. Yay. I don't feel so bad if the chief tech officer has to trip over that one.
It's one of the hardest words to say. And if you think it's hard to teach people that are native English speakers how to say spectrometry, try with the people internationally. This technology got invented in a classroom in Hanoi, Vietnam. I started trying to teach him how to say the word by sort of directing like in a symphony.
Oh, my goodness. That is crazy. Well, you know, it's one, you know, and I can't remember. It wasn't Isaac Newton. Who was it that discovered spectrometry?
Well, no, actually, Newton figured out about the refractive index and breaking white light into the multiple colors.
Right, right. So that was the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And then there was somebody else who...
Fraunhofer looked at atomic emission. Yeah.
Right. Fraunhofer. That's right. And so what's happened since then? It's just been amazing. And you have some proprietary technology that makes your company a little bit unique in the field and maybe
Indeed.
Gives you an advantage.
Most people, when they want to break light into its multiple colors, use devices called diffraction gratings.
Mm-hmm.
And the diffraction gratings used in scientific instruments are expensive and extremely delicate. Mm-hmm. Put a thumbprint on a grating and you just bought it.
Oh, boy.
So to come up with technology where you can use plastic film gratings is a way to, of course, make things less expensive. Now, I didn't invent plastic film gratings. In fact, there was one in one of my physics textbooks from back in the 1970s.
Wow.
But I wanted to teach the students in Vietnam about spectrometry. So I took a little kits over there that made up with these commercial plastic film gratings, and I thought it was going to be a one-use teaching experiment.
Almost disposable.
Yeah.
Right.
And one of the students over there, Bui Ang Tu by name. She goes by Annie. Got so interested in this experiment that she took a bunch of the gratings home and started playing with them. And when she came back the next day, she had data which showed that if you combine these gratings in an appropriate way, you could get not just one, not just two, but hundreds of diffraction orders to the public, little rainbows.
Wow.
And these hundreds of orders were arrayed in such a way that instead of just using a tiny portion of a camera for getting data, you could get it from the entire image. And so you had a way of using inexpensive cameras to get high-quality data. And from there, it's just been onward and upward. So
wow.
She's been over here a couple of times to work on it. There's smart people all over the world.
Yes.
And, I mean, people in this town appreciate that. Not that everybody in the country seems to be fully clued in on it.
Well, no, there's smart people everywhere. But, you know, the cool thing is a lot of them like to come here. And that's what I think is really cool.
Yeah. Well, University of Illinois has a higher percentage of students from outside the United States than I think any other public university, maybe any other university as far as I know.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful.
Yep.
And it's kind of cool to have a connection with Vietnam, you know, after all these years, we're actually kind of becoming partners with them in so many ways.
Indeed we are. I mean, they came to the U of I to get help with improving their teaching. Because what was left of them by the French and the Russians was...
Oh, they probably had no teachers.
Well, they had teachers, but it was interesting.
Oh, I was thinking Cambodia. That's where they killed all the teachers.
Oh, well, that. But, and in fact, Vietnam went in there at that point to try to stop some of that. But the teaching style that they had, because they didn't have a lot of foreign exchange, was that the instructor would walk into the classroom, open the copy of the textbook, read it to the students, and walk out.
Wow.
And so we were asked, well, isn't there a better way to do that? Well, as a matter of fact, there is. And the reason they came to Illinois was because of the long history of outstanding teaching in our chemistry department.
Neat.
Stan Smith and Gil Haight and Speed Marvel. And there's a long, long list going back to the beginning of the 20th century. So all this got negotiated by department heads and school directors long before I knew anything was going on. And in the fall of 2007, one of my colleagues, Pat Shapley, spotted me walking across the quad and said, hey, you'll never guess where I've just been. And I did not guess. So being of our age, you can imagine that when I first heard the word Hanoi, I kind of flinched a little bit. But it's turned out to be one of the most fascinating and fulfilling things that ever came out of being a member of the U of I faculty.
Now, have you been over there?
I have taught over there a total of 10 times now.
How cool.
Yeah, and the spectrometer got invented on round two.
Wow.
So when I first went over there, I was teaching a course called quantitative analysis, which is all about wet chemistry for analyzing materials.
Right.
And actually, they're pretty good at that because they've been using these manual methods that have become passé on this side of the ocean because that's all they had access to for many years. And then they said, when are you coming back to teach instrumental analysis, the use of instruments to make these measurements? And I kind of looked at them like they were from Mars. How do you teach students that have never used an instrument about instruments? Well, the answer is the same way I learned. You build them.
Wow.
So I took this little kid over there so they could build an instrument and see how it worked.
And she built a better mousetrap.
You bet.
Well, like this guy who invented the Segway. You know, everybody's heard of the Segway.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like this genius. And it started, the reason he has all of his
Dean
fortune.
Dean Kamen,
right. And he, they asked him to reinvent this. It was some kind of a you know what they use with kidney patients where they...
Dialysis?
Dialysis, yeah. Right. And most of the time, it was a big machine. It was about the size of a washing machine. It cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, people had to go to the hospital. They had some problem with a valve or something, and they asked him, take a look at this, and maybe you can make a better valve.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he comes and he throws the valve out, and he just reinvents the whole thing to where it was something like
about a cubic foot. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could put it under a chair in your house and do your own dialysis.
That's a theme that we're hearing over and over here.
Yeah.
do it yourself. Don't do it at some central facility.
Right.
And sure, there are times when you can't do it yourself because it's too complicated or too specialized.
Right.
But if you can do most of it yourself, then you free up the experts to only do what the experts need to do.
Right.
It's the same thing that SpectroClick is aimed at.
Yeah.
Is let's do triage with our instrument, and when you find something that's in that yellow zone of maybe it's too much, maybe it's too little, I'm not quite sure, then call in a professional analytical chemist or a professional biologist or a med tech to look at things in great detail.
Yeah.
There are times when only an expert can do it. But, I mean, used to be, you may remember, there used to be elevator operators.
Yeah.
People couldn't run their own elevators. Well, now, there are still places where there are elevator operators, but they're not many.
Really great analogy, great analogy. Well, all right, so now we're to the point where you have these instruments. Are you still in the research phase? Are you manufacturing? Where are you at?
We're in transition. Okay. We have, our colleagues in Vietnam have bought several instruments. So they'll be delivered this fall.
Mm-hmm.
We owe our Army colleagues a working instrument next year.
Mm-hmm.
We are still doing software development.
Mm-hmm.
There were three measurement problems that we had to solve when we started out. And one of them is solved. Another is 90% solved. And another is more like 50%. We'll get that later this year.
Right.
But the other thing is, this is where our colleagues here in Champaign-Urbana have been of tremendous help. First of all, for the mechanical engineering. The folks up at the product manufactory, which is on the north side of Urbana, I took a design over to them. They're mechanical engineers. I'm not.
Right.
And they took one look at what I designed. They said, well, that may be okay for spectrometry, and it may be okay for the basic concepts, but it's completely non-manufacturable. Mm. Let's help you.
Cool.
And they have turned this into something that can actually be manufactured. Software. So far, most of the code has been written by little old me.
Wow.
And I am a chemist, and I have been writing software for 40 years, and I enjoy doing it.
What
but I am not
language?
A professional. I hardly should say this, but I use something called Delphi. It used to be Pascal.
Okay.
And most of the computer scientists in the world hear that, and they giggle at me as I'm a troglodyte. But between Heartland Science and Technology Group and the Applied Research Institute on the U of I campus, I'm getting a lot of help now in getting the software translated from good enough for me to use to good enough to be usable. There's
right.
a huge difference.
Right.
For me to use it, if there's some little glitch, I could just tweak it. It can't be tweakable by the user.
No. It's got
simply
to be seamless.
Got to work.
Right.
That's right. And so fortunately, there are professionals who are part of this team that are making things go. But the other thing where the team extends actually to South Carolina, there is a company there called High Purity Standards. And it was founded by a scientist that used to be at the National Institute for Standards and Technology. And Ted Raines knew more about how to make a solution that actually had the composition that it should have than just about anybody else I've ever met. His daughter now runs High Purity Standards, so they're going to make the little reactant packets with QR codes.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
How cool. Well, I just can't tell you how much fun it is to have you here and to talk about these things. They're so exciting. And energizing and futuristic, and we're out of time, but if people want to learn a little bit more, how can they find out more information?
Well, the first place to go is obviously the web. Go to spectroclick.com, and you'll see pictures of our instrument, and you'll see the team that's working on it. There are a bunch of people that are involved that we haven't had time to go into, my CEO, my interns, and so on.
Yeah.
And you can... be among the first to find out when we go on sale. We're really hoping that by this fall we'll have something that we can sell to whoever wants it.
Well, maybe I could have you back on later and we could talk.
Sounds like a great idea.
Okay, and you'll bring us up to speed. Fantastic. We've been talking with Alexander Scheelein. He is the president and chief technology officer of a company called SpectroClick. Thanks for being with us on the show today.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you. Don't go away. We have much more right after the break.